I'm Logan Webb, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
This right here is my Hall of Fame. And to be recognized with the incredible names of this historical franchise is beyond belief. I always wanted to win and have others around me be winners. We all did that together here. I am Will the Thrill Clark. I am part of San Francisco. And I am forever a Giant.
Woo! It is Monday, August 1st, 2022, and this is episode 259 of the TortureCast. And those, were, of course, were the ending words to Will Clark's speech on Saturday for his number 22 retirement ceremony. And I know I am a biased Giants fan. He was my favorite player growing up. He still is and always will be. I was at the park in the press box during that whole speech. And I already was getting chills, but that last closing line, Eric, I just was like, I almost lost in the press box. I almost like stood up and went like, yeah. But and by the way, yeah, that voice you hear on the other side is Eric Nathanson coming to you from, I think, the fourth state he's broadcast from since he started this podcast.
I think you're right. Fifth state, Florida, Georgia, Nevada, Arizona.
About the farm in Georgia. Okay.
Yep, and now Colorado. I'm all over the map, but I didn't miss Will Clark. I saw some of it. And that line, when I saw it, I love how he raises his arm. Like, he's just trying to punctuate it. And like, it didn't go up as well as he wanted. So he raised the other one. But you could tell Will really wished he had won something.
Not as flexible.
Yeah.
I had a buddy. I shared your interview with Will the other day on Facebook. And I had a buddy come back at me. He's like, you know, he was my favorite left-handed swinger growing up. And I said, I know. I used to watch you try to mimic him in the backyard. So even kids in the Chicago area thought so much of Will Clark that they were imitating his swing in the late 80s and early 90s. I mean, that's how iconic Will was. And I'm so glad they won that game. It was so much fun, though. You were there. Like you said, you had that feeling. That ballpark must have been electric that day.
It was absolutely electric. And it was so much fun because I got there early, of course. They opened the gates 2.5 hours early instead of 2 hours to anticipate this. I've never seen so many number 22 jerseys at a Giants game in my life. There's great pictures of like six guys at a urinal all having wearing number 22. I mean, it was incredible to see all these guys that were, you know, some were my age, some were a little bit younger, but just, you know, all the 40-somethings coming with their number 22 jerseys. Yeah, because that was our guy growing up, right? The new generation, it's all about, you know, Posey and Crawford and Belt and these guys and Mad Bum. But for my generation, it was Will Clark was kind of at the top of the list. And to this day, he's my favorite. I got my whole man cave, fan cave, of course, I broadcast from. And here's like, you know, I have many of these. Here's an 8x10. Chad, all my best on becoming an Eagle Scout. Yes, I was a Boy Scout.
God, look how young he looks there.
I know. He signed a bunch of stuff and hats and pennants. I met him a couple of times. Just really, really nice back in the day. And then, you know, the first time I had re-met him again was in 2014. And that was the interview I reposted this past week. And that's funny because, like, that was 8 years ago now, right? That's crazy. But that was before that was the season they won their last World Series. So it was kind of cool to revisit that. But the park was electric. I can't describe it. I mean, it was, you know, and again, it wasn't a playoff atmosphere. It wasn't that kind of electricity. It was just, you knew something special was going on and everybody was just in a really jovial, happy mood. And, you know, I got there early, saw all the Clark jerseys, went into the clubhouse early and was able to get an interview with Logan Webb, which we'll talk about in a little while. And I'll put that interview, by the way, at the end of this podcast for those of you who haven't listen to it. Logan was great. We talked a bunch about Will Clark and the conversations he's had with him and others and kind of old school baseball versus analytics. But the ceremony itself, you know, this is something that I always wanted to see him in the Hall of Fame. And I know that he may always fall short because of the numbers. He just doesn't maybe quite have it in some people's mind, and that's fine.
He could have had he hung around. He really, I mean, I shouldn't say had he hung around.
Yeah, he finished. Yeah, at the top of his game, he hit over 300 that last year with St. Louis, and like played so well in the playoffs. He absolutely had several more years left in him. He needed to spend time with his son, of course, who has autism, and that was the main reason why he retired. I agree with you. I think if he had played another 3 years, crossed the 300 home run mark, I think he finished with 284 or something like that. You know, continued to hit around 300. His career average was 303. I think he would have been right in there, but he's close, and maybe in 30 years the Veterans Committee will, you know, put him in. I don't know, but to see his number retired is something I just always had wanted to see, because I did think he deserved that. I did, and obviously management ultimately agreed. And 2019, that's when he got the word about it being retired. And of course, in 2020, the pandemic happened. Then they were going to push it to 2021, but they weren't sure about the return and the rebound of COVID. So they pushed it off to this year. So, but he said it was appropriate because it's in the year 22, you know? So
that's what I was going to say. It worked out perfectly in that way. He Will Clark, and they're smart to do it just from a business standpoint. Like for you know, Will was very special to our generation. That's the point, though. Our generation's spending money on the Giants right now, so they want to make us happy. And by retiring somebody like Will Clark, that totally gets the fan base going. You know, they did it in a weekend. They didn't even do it against the Cardinals or the Cubs. They chose the Cubs just because of 89, and I love that aspect about it. It was nostalgic a little bit watching, you know, some of the reruns and stuff like that, because all weekend they were talking about stuff, you know, that Maddox game. I watched the whole thing on whether or not Will Clark was the genesis of them covering their mouths now or whether or not. And he's like, you know, Maddox is like, no, it wasn't that time, but it did seem to be that time. So it was really interesting all weekend to see that stuff. And Will Clark, I mean, just, you knew he wanted to be a Giant for life. This fan base embraced him better than anybody else. They really did. And it's a shame that everybody has worn 22 since he last wore it. I mean, there's been like 14 guys that have worn the number 22.
22 players, ironically, have worn number 22 since he left the Giants in 1993.
That's random.
I looked it up this week, and it was really funny that it was exactly 22. And of course, the last person was Andrew McCutchen in 2018. He was the last person. But the list, I recognize most of the names, but then there's a couple on there. I'm like, I don't even remember that guy. It was probably some dude who was with the team for 2 months, you know, in the utility role. But, you know, the biggest one,
I think Dan Uglow. Uglow wore 22.
Uglow was a short, you know, stint, but you had Eli Whiteside. He wore it forever. He was a kind of a long tenure Giant as the backup catcher. You said Dan Uglow. Then you had Jake Peavy briefly with the team and Andrew McCutchen. You had Mike Matheny. Mike Matheny wore 22. Right. He was with the team catching. So there are quite a few notable players, actually, that wore his number. But then some others that weren't as notable. But it's cool because, you know, they retired Bonds' number a few years ago. But I think the question I have for you, and they were playing with this on different broadcasts I heard, no Giant has worn 40 since Mad Bum left. No Giant has worn 28, of course, in the short time that Posey's been gone. And I don't think anyone's going to be wearing number 35 anytime soon after Crawford goes. And the same could be maybe said for Belt. I'm not sure yet. So the question is, kind of out of those core guys, you know, from those years of all the World Series championships and who were with the team for quite a long time, who do you think are the next guys that are locks or ones that are kind of like, I don't know, maybe in 30 years kind of thing? Because I mean, Posey's that's a no doubter. He might even get a statue. I think Mad Bum is another one. I do. He's not quite as close to Posey, but I think he's going to get his number retired. Then I think it gets into the questionable area only because you know, Crawford and Belt were around for two of the three, not all three. So that makes a slight difference. But hey, look, Will Clark didn't have any, right? He didn't have any world championships. But, you know, like Brandon Belt, you look at his numbers and was he 300 hitter like Clark? No, but he has more home runs than Clark in a Giant uniform, you know, things like that. Right. And he played first base. Obviously, you have Crawford winning all the gold gloves, being a multiple all-star, winning two World Series, and just being a lifelong Giants fan, you know, who, I mean, he was like being held by Will Clark back in the early 90s when he was like a little toddler, right? Like there's all these connections that he has to Giants history, and he still got another year left in him on this contract. And so I could definitely see 28 and 40 going up on the wall, and I see a distinct possibility for 35 and maybe even 9 going up there one day. Is there anyone else I'm missing? And what do you feel about those guys?
Yeah. 15, Bruce Bochy.
Oh, well, of course. Yes. I'm thinking of the, just the player side. You're 100% right.
Bochy's where my head went. He should be first. Yeah. And then
he might even be first. Yeah, I agree. No, you're right. I was thinking of just the player side. No doubt Bochy's 15 will be up there. Yep.
I say Buster, and I want to agree with you on Madison Bumgarner. I really, really do. So maybe Madison Bumgarner, but I think that's it. I don't know. Crawford, you know what? I take it back. Crawford is so intertwined with the fabric of the San Francisco Giants, like you said. Yeah. It just makes sense. It really does. But poor Belt then will get left out. But at least he'll get on the wall of fame because he will. Crawford will.
Oh, yeah.
Bumgarner will, I think. I don't know. I think he played 10 years with the Giants. I don't know. They're going to waive. They would waive it anyways. So they'll all get on the wall of fame. But I definitely think it should go Bochy, then Posey. Honestly, then Crawford, then Bumgarner, I would say. I do think Crawford's so intertwined with the Giants that it just makes sense that nobody wears 35 again, that he's the guy at this point. Yeah. So that those would be my main ones. I'd like to see them set up something for Bochy for next year, but I think they've been waiting to see if he goes and manages somewhere else again, and they don't want to push it. I wouldn't be shocked if they brought it to him at one point, and he's like, let's wait a couple years and see how things are then. I want my boy Buster to be there, and maybe the Diamondbacks in town, so I can see Bumgarner. I mean, that's what I can see happening. So yeah. You know, they might shoot for next year or the year after. So I could see Bochy, Posey, and Crawford as definites, and Bum as a possibility. And Belt, sorry buddy, but you're gonna be Belt has half the WAR lifetime that Will Clark has. Yeah. In almost the same amount of years, Will Clark has played for this organization. So, I mean, just putting him up to the test of that, you can see that he doesn't compare.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think Belt's kind of at the very bottom of that possibility list. And if it were to happen, it would be a very long time from now. Like it wouldn't be, you know, 5 years after he retired. Cause I mean, clearly he's not going to the Hall of Fame, but neither is Brandon Crawford. He's not going to the Hall of Fame either. Buster Posey most likely will. Bruce Bochy definitely will. And even a guy like Madison Bumgarner, when he's done, he's not going to go to the Hall of Fame. I mean, I think he has merit, and I think he'll gain more than 10% of the vote and stay on the ballot. But yeah, I don't think he's going. But, you know, that's not a requirement for your number to get retired. That is not.
Not anymore. You know what I mean?
It did kind of used to be before Barry Bonds, right? Because Bonds was the first number retired of a non-Hall of Famer. So, and now you have two. So the door has definitely been opened for that. And like Will Clark said in that audio clip I played, this is my Hall of Fame. And I thought that was a really cool statement, you know, and I am Will the Thrill Clark. I am part of San Francisco. I mean, he just closed that thing out and we all wanted to go play for him right then and there. Right? We were all like, let's go. Let's go.
I was like, so happy they won that game.
Well, and that was, that got questionable too. It's funny. The last two games I've gone to with Willie, they're up 4-0. They hung on for 4-3 barely in the ninth. This game, they're up 5-0. They barely hung on 5-4 with the tying run on second in the ninth. I'm like, what the hell is going on with these games, man? I mean, again, that's why we're called Torture Cast for a reason. Right. And that was very torturous.
It was. We were all texting during that moment. You know, I was like, they're the Cubs, it'll be fine. And then it kept happening. And it was all freaking ground balls, too.
Poor Jason Vossler, man. I mean, look, right. You know, it was funny in the post gamer, Gabe Kapler, because they were asking him, like, what the hell are you going to do for shortstop tomorrow? And he's like, yeah, we got to figure that out. He said, clearly, Voss isn't going to be there tomorrow. He's like, look, I don't mean to be mean, but like, you know, he did his job. He fielded the ball. He threw guys out. But you can tell the instincts weren't there. He's like, there should have been a couple double plays, and there weren't. So, you know, like it was very obvious. Yeah, like even that last play before the last out, I should say, when there was a run on first, he grabbed that ball and like second base was just standing there, just like
he didn't even think about it. He just went right to first. I totally
he just went
that.
Right to first, and we're just sitting in the press box going, that wasn't even that hard of a play to flip to second, and it would have kept the tying run on first. But now the tying run's in scoring position. It's kind of like, yeah, he got an out, but that should have been a force play there. And so, yeah, Cap obviously referred to that one and the one before where it should have been a double play. But hey, look, they got it. They took 3 out of 4 from the Cubs. It was a heck of a weekend with the Will Clark ceremony and all the dignitaries that were there. You know, you had your Barry Bonds and Robbie Thompson, Bruce Bochy, Buster Posey, Hackman, Kevin Mitchell, and the list goes on and on and on. It was really cool to see all those guys. After he threw balls to the crowd during the first inning, Will Clark came up to the press box, so we all got to stand around and you know, I deferred to the regular media for questions. Obviously, I just stood there like a geek with my phone, just filming him a few feet in front of me.
But did Steven ever ask him any questions, or did he stay quiet too?
He stayed quiet too. Yeah,
I thought so.
But it was really cool because he was soaking it all in. I mean, he's definitely not like, oh, I got to deal with the media. He was like, hey, what do you guys got? What do you guys got? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, he was so into it. So honest too, especially with the whole, like, he talked about not giving away participation trophies, and he was very careful with his language. You could tell he was substituting, you know, when the stuff got real, because like he emphasized the word he was replacing, so he was PG, you know, or G with it. And someone asked him about managing or coaching in the big leagues ever, and he just immediately was like, his look was like, hell no. But then he kind of explained, and he was like, nah, I'm the one to kick you in the butt. You know, I'm going to kick you in the butt and tell you what you're doing wrong. I am not the guy to pick you up and dust you off and say, good job. He's like, that's not
he's
me.
Not, uh-uh. Yeah.
I don't do that. He's like, so I don't think so. I don't think I'm ever going to be a coach or manager in the major leagues. He's like, because you don't want me, especially with today. Like, he was kind of referring to today's generation. You know, it's kind of like, again, with the participation trophies. Yeah, I mean, if you had a beer with him, you know he'd be like, these goddamn pansies these days. Maybe. Like,
yeah, but I mean, that's the thing. They were saying the same thing about his generation, the guys who played in the 60s. It's so funny how cyclical it becomes. And I could see it. He was in the booth, too, for a little bit. And you could tell he was making sure that he didn't step on his own words.
Yeah, no, he was great. And the only time I saw him at the rest of the game, it was long after I was done with the post game pressers and all that. And I was coming back up to the elevator. So the elevator opens and people are just pouring out and pouring out. And I'm like to the side, so I can't see into the elevator pouring out. It was like a clown car. But then I started recognizing some of Will Clark's family and friends that were there. I was like, Oh. And then sure enough, I mean, after 30 people, you know, those freight elevators, you're familiar with those. At the end, Will Clark comes out. Everybody is laughing. Everybody is smiling. Everybody's just having the greatest old time. And I kind of looked up at him and I said, that's a damn clown car. He just kind of looked at me and chuckled and he walked by. And then I walked in and talked to the lady who operates the elevator. And I was like, wow, that was full. She's all, that was a very full elevator of very happy people. So him and his friends and family had a great time, clearly.
That's the best part about having you there that night. Like, let me tell you, listeners, my favorite part of Saturday night was the moment Chad started texting all the pictures that he had taken and stuff like that. I wasn't kidding you. I was waiting for that moment. I was so excited to see different things, you know, Boach, Wotus, you know, a bunch of guys around and what you had from behind the scenes. The field looked phenomenal. I thought they did an unbelievable job in the outfield. I mean, it was great, the painted thing behind the plate, but that cut in the grass in the outfield, that was just so cool. It was such, it was a really great scene to see everything be celebrated. And the Giants haven't had the best year. So to see everybody laughing and having a good time just made it all that much better. I mean, because, you know, the clown car full of people would have been laughing whether the Giants won that game or not. And oh, that's sure. The nice, you know what I mean? That's the nice thing about those kind of nights. Clark said to Kirk and Kipe when he talked to them that he woke up that morning and then he was sitting on the bed for a little bit. And his wife's like, "What are you doing?" And he's like, "I'm locking in. It's like a game day. I have to lock in," which totally, when you said, he's like, "All right, I'm ready. Talk to me." That totally, you know what I mean? That jives together. You could tell that Clark was all about, "This is my day. Let's just celebrate it and have fun with everything we can." And I wish I'd gotten to see the ceremony. I'm now too far away to get those kinds of things streamed, but I wish I'd seen. I'm going to dig it out of YouTube here eventually. It was, the stuff I saw was really fun. And, you know, it's great for our generation to celebrate our accomplishments, even if it wasn't World Series accomplishments. You know, Clark was our guy. So, you know, it was fun. I'm so glad it was against the Cubs too. That made it so much more sweeter.
They had a bunch of dignitaries there, and then they had people who couldn't make it, but they gave video messages, including Roger Craig, obviously.
Oh yeah.
Former manager. And the rumor has it that he's not doing very well mentally. He's definitely having some memory issues, those kinds of things. But he's like 93 years old, right? So you expect that. But his video message was great, and I'm going to paraphrase, but he basically was like, you know, "Hey, Will." You know, he's kind of having a little trouble talking and stuff like that. He's all, "You're a great player, but if you had listened to me, you would have been even better." And he's like, "Thanks, and peace out." And like the whole crowd was just laughing, and he's laughing. He's just great. This dry Roger Craig wit and humor still coming through, which was fantastic. But
I mean, he's the manager we grew up with. You know what I mean? Yeah. When we really started keying in on the Giants, Roger Craig was the man. I mean, Frank Robinson was there before him, and then there was somebody in between. But Roger Craig was the team that brought the guy that brought our Giants back to respectability. So it's good to still see he's still kicking.
The original hum baby, you know. And I mean, I thought he was old when he was a manager. That was
right? Like, he looks so old.
It's like, damn, this dude is old.
When I started reading books about like the 50s and baseball and saw that Roger Craig was pitching back then, even then I'm like, why does he look so old then? Like, I thought he pitched in the 30s with the way he looks.
He lived a tough life or something.
Apparently. Wow. I guess that's what I'm going to look like in a few years.
They had video messages from Dusty Baker and others too. So Dusty had some good anecdotes as well. It was great. It was just overall a great ceremony. I know I'm dwelling too long on this for a Giants podcast, but I'm not.
We're about to hit the 22-minute mark, so it's perfect. We'll do 22 minutes on Will Clark.
And then we'll move on. Boom, 22. All right, we just hit 22. That is a perfect segue, Eric. Thank you very much. Good note on that. All right. So I was also able to talk to Logan Webb prior to the game, which was great. He was very cordial and gracious with his time. And I will put it at the end of the podcast for those of you that have not listened to it. It's also available independently on our feed as well, kind of solo. But, you know, it's a happy day. It's a big ceremony. I asked to begin with softball questions, of course. You know, who was his favorite player growing up? And for those of you that didn't know, he was an A's fan growing up, and he grew up in Rocklin, California, which is kind of the foothills of the Sierras. So it's only like about two hour drive from the East Bay. So the A's were kind of closest geographically to him. But yeah, he was talking about Mulder, Zito, Bobby Crosby, Eric Chavez, right? Those were kind of the guys that he followed, which is just so funny because he's like, he's just so young, Eric. And like when I hear those names, I think, aren't they still playing? Oh, wait, no, they're not playing anymore, but it just didn't seem.
I was a full-grown adult when they started. I was a full-grown adult when they finished. It's weird to have that now.
Yeah, exactly. And Barry Zito was even, you know, part of the Giants championship teams, right? So, like, it is what it is. So, yeah, he grew up an A's fan, but he talked about that. He talked a little bit about Will Clark and the conversations he's had with him. And you know, I was curious as to kind of that old school mentality that Clark brings versus the analytics today. And, you know, you should just hear it for yourself. I don't want to ruin anything, but he definitely seemed to indicate he definitely likes some of that old school mentality, not always analytics. I mean, look, this is the guy that's been pulled from a couple of games. He was not happy to be pulled, you know? So, yeah, and he's such a gamer. And even during their slide, their 7-game losing streak, which, by the way, we have not recorded since they opened the second half, with 7 straight losses, which is kind of really put a big damper on their playoff chances right now, and we'll get to that. You know, he admitted in during one of those starts, he was just trying to strike everyone out because he was just trying to do too much to help this team rebound and get back to their winning ways. But in the end, you know, I asked him, well, first of all, he also talked about talking with Bonds. And then I joked that, you know, oh, you can't ask him about hitting tips anymore. And he was like, no, you could tell he was frustrated the fact that he can't hit anymore.
Well, he's got the final home run. He should be so
he's got the final home run. That's true. That's true. But then we talked about Buster Posey, and he obviously just thinks the world of Buster and what he was able to do on the field, not only personally, but, you know, with other players. And then I asked him, you know, how much did it mean to him when Buster Posey, during his retirement ceremony, specifically called out Logan Webb, basically saying, that's the guy you want on your team. And Logan, you can't see it, but he just beamed this massive smile in front of me. And it was very genuine. He more than respects Buster Posey as a mentor and a colleague and a friend. And, you know, that meant obviously a lot to him. So it was really, really cool. Then I was able to wrap up asking him, hey, look, you guys came stumbling out of the gate. What is it going to take? You guys are still only four back. You still can get in the playoffs. What is it going to take? And he didn't cite anything about, you know, defense or, you know, pitching or hitting. It was like, we just got to start playing with fun again. We got to get back to those ways. And it was a, you know, fairly generic answer, I know, but in a way it's true. Baseball is supposed to be fun, right? When you're playing at the top of your game and winning, you're having fun, you know? So you want to go out there and have that fun. So it was more of an old school answer, but I appreciated it. So
that seven game winning streak was losing streak was still sticking in his head, I think, because I don't think they had any fun on that road trip.
No. I mean, because by the time I had talked to him, they had still lost 8 out of 9, right? Because at that point, they were 1-1 against the Cubs. So, you know, they're 1-8 when I interviewed him. And so he's still not feeling good about things. There's no doubt about it. And he had just been speaking with Carlos Rodon at their lockers, and they were laughing and giggling and showing each other their phones and having a good time. And we should get to that now. Carlos Rodon went out on Sunday Night Baseball yesterday and threw an absolute gem. 7 innings, 2 hits, 12 strikeouts, just was dominant in his start against the Cubs. And it is possible that is the last time we'll see Carlos Rodon pitch for the San Francisco Giants. And we wouldn't have thought that a week ago. They were going to be buyers, if anything. But now it has been known and said to the masses, we are listening. We are listening for trade offers for anyone except for someone named Logan Webb.
Right. So, and probably Camilo Duvall, but that's it.
Yeah, that's probably true. So that being said, the deadline is literally about 26 hours from now, Eric, 6 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, August 2nd, as we sit here at 1 p.m. Pacific, Monday, August 1st. Obviously, nothing's hit the wire that I've known in the last since we've been recording.
The Josh Hader trade.
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
So Josh Hader got traded from Milwaukee to San Diego for Taylor Rogers, surprisingly. Didn't listen to Lament and a couple other guys. So the Brewers feel comfortable with Williams taking over their closer role, and the Padres seem to be going for it. The Padres have left-handed Hader. And the Giants don't have to worry about him. We saw what they did to him a couple weeks ago and the most amazing comeback all season. That was the best game all year, the best inning all year. But so that's the biggest move that we've seen so far today. Sorry, not to interrupt, but that's the biggest move that we've seen so far. I'm scrolling through my timeline right now looking to make sure nothing else has popped up since then.
Thank you. Yeah, I was on a work call right before we started this, so I've been out of the loop for a couple hours. Obviously, a couple of days ago, Luis Castillo was traded from the Reds. Now, he was a former Giant, and I still can't believe the Giants. Oof. Anyway, we won't talk about that trade from several years ago. But he went to Seattle for 4 really top prospects in their organization. That was a haul for the Reds, Eric. That was a haul. Now, granted, these are not guys that will be a guarantee to make it big in the pros, so you can never say that, oh, they got a steal for it. We don't know that yet. That's to be determined later. But I think it does set the benchmark for teams that are interested in Carlos Rodon, right? Because he is, established himself certainly over the last couple of years as an elite starting pitcher. He has not shown any problems with wear and tear on his arm this year. He's already hit the minimum innings. And the other question is the fact that, or the other fact, the other consideration, Carlos Rodon hit his minimum innings pitched, which triggers his potential to opt out after 1 year. And so what that means, for those of you who don't really understand that, he signed a 2-year deal, but because he hit the minimum innings requirement for the opt-out deal, after the season is over, Carlos can just tell the San Francisco Giants, I opt out. I am now a free agent. So from the Giants' perspective, he essentially is on a 1-year deal. And with their recent losing streak and being 4 games out of the wild card, could the Giants make the playoffs? Absolutely. But they're going to be on the road for all 3 games, right? That first round. I think it's shown the Giants are just not nearly as strong as they were last year. And the chances of going deep into the playoffs aren't very high. Let's put it that way. So from a management perspective, you put on Farhan's hat, Eric. Is it worth, if you can get a massive haul of prospects of near or at major league quality players for the future, or do you hold him onto him with the hopes that he's going to help you with the stretch drive to squeeze into that number 6 spot and hopefully, you know, ride some lightning in a bottle and go through the playoffs?
I really wish Willie was here today because I have a feeling we'd be on opposite sides right now because I'm in full sell mode. Get what you can for Rodon. Get what you can for Jock. If there's a team out there that's interested in Yastrzemski, you have to listen. You have to listen on everybody. And to hear them say that the Giants are listening on everybody doesn't necessarily move the needle for me just yet because Farhan hasn't shown us that he's necessarily going to make those moves. What we are basing us, all of our assumptions right now are last year the Giants were in it, so they went for it. They traded for Chris Bryant. We knew they'd contend for a championship. They made a move designed to win a World Series, and so they made that Chris Bryant move. The year before that was COVID year, so there was no real trade deadline. But the year before that was the year with Mad Bum. Yep. And Farhan held on to Mad Bum. The Giants were on the fringes of the playoff race, and they decided to pretty much stand pat, except for one little bullpen move. And so that's all we have to go off with Farhan's history. So it's tough to have an idea what he's going to do here. And if I was in his position, I'd sell everybody. I would. I would sell Rodon. Rodon might not come back, but that's fine. How many years in a row have pitchers come to San Francisco and gotten right? How many years in a row have they been able to sign starting pitching is not the issue this year. Alex Cobb's not the issue this year. Alex Wood's not the issue. They've had their struggles, sure, but they're not the issues this year. And the Giants have proven a track record of being good with starters. So if they lose Rodon, fine, we'll get another guy. I really think that's their perspective on this. So if I'm Farhan, I sell. I sell everybody I can. I don't care. You're 4.5 back. I'm looking right now. You're 4 back in the wild card, but that's just of the third wild card team. You got another team in front of you. Yeah. And I don't see Philly slowing down. San Diego's making moves left and right to hold on to their spot. Atlanta's not going anywhere. Milwaukee's not going anywhere. And they're leading the Central. St. Louis is the one team you really got to look at that they can catch. And they're the ones that are being talked about to get Soto more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So from the Giants' perspective, I think it's time to wave the white flag. I think this is just the year that they say, we're not there. And I think that's why they haven't done anything yet, because they had Will Clark this weekend. They have the Dodgers coming in. They wanted to milk as long as they could. And knowing that they can sell out this Dodgers series because it's the Dodgers, no problem, is not a big deal. But Farhan's got to straddle that line. What is management? What is ownership telling him? How much money can he spend? Should they go for it? Should they not? So, I mean, if I'm in his shoes, I sell. I do. I sell, sell, sell. Exactly like Mike says here. I sell, sell, sell. I do. Because there is so much money coming off the books next year. Brandon Crawford's your biggest contract is $16 million. There's a $5 million buyout on Longo's contract. And then you've only got Wood, Disco, and Tommy La Stella locked up over $10 million next year. So, you know, they're not a good team. They're the second or third worst in fielding. You know, I don't care that Rodon and Webb would be an amazing 1-2 monster in the playoffs. This team is underperforming. Their Pythagorean win-loss would have them tied with the Cardinals right now, one game back. That's how bad the fielding's been this year. So, sell. I'm ready. I'm so ready to sell. I'm so ready to cut bait with this season and look to next year. I really am.
Yeah, I tend to float over in your neck of the woods, Eric. I wouldn't have thought this a week ago, but obviously coming out of the All-Star break, losing 8 of 9 and 7 in a row, and now you're facing 4 against the Dodgers. I mean, the last time the Dodgers came to Oracle Park, the Giants actually swept them in a 3-game series. But then they go down to L.A., and then they get swept in a 4-game series. And then they get swept in Arizona. Like, Arizona, for God's sakes.
Those are the games that, like...
17 out of 19 last year. I don't expect that this year, but not to get swept by Arizona, who is a worse team. And then you have, you know, L.A. coming back in this weekend and or this week. And look, it's a 4-game series. Again, a split is the best I think the Giants are going to do this week, right? But most likely they're going to lose 3 out of 4. And I'm trying to be a pessimist, guys. I'm not. It's just the reality is the Dodgers are probably the best team or second best team in all of Major League Baseball right now. They're built to win right now. And they're just demolishing everyone. They're just steamrolling everyone right now. It's not even close. And the Giants have the worst record in the majors since like May 18th or whatever it is, right? I mean, they are a bad team right now. They are a bad team. And even if some miracle, like you said, they have to leapfrog not one, they have to leapfrog 2 teams to get into the wild card, right? So that's a problem. And it really reduces your chances of getting in. And once they do get in, then they got to face the top seed and the wild card side of things anyway, the number 3 seed. And then they got to, you know, win 3 on the road or 2 out of 3 on the road. So is it possible? Yes. And the only reason I bring this up is because, you know, last year on August 1st, the Atlanta Braves were 52-54. They were actually 2 games under 500.
Wow. I didn't even realize that.
The Giants are 51-51 right now. Right. So I didn't look up where the Braves were in terms of the standings, but point being, they went, you know, they did those trades. They got those guys, Jock and others, and they went on a tear. They went on an absolute tear at the end of the season. They won the division. Then they, because, you know, they're in a weaker division, at least last year. And then they went on a tear through the playoffs. Of course, they knocked out the Dodgers. Thank you very much, Atlanta Braves. But it has been done before, right? The Washington Nationals did it in 2019. For God's sakes, the Giants in 2014 only won 88 games. And they won the World Series. So it's not that it can't happen. It certainly can. But like you said, is it worth putting it on that very slim chance that that happens? I mean, if you were to say they're going to win the World Series, of course, but no one knows that. So the chances of winning a World Series in the future, I think, increase more dramatically if you can sell Rodon and or Peterson for a haul. I do. Yeah. I agree with you there. I just agree. Think you got to look at this year going, we are kind of the old jalopy coming into the airport.
They are, though, but that perfectly describes this team. Yeah. Look at all the old guys that are limping around this ballpark right now.
So I just, it hurts me to say it because I'm not saying give up on, this is not waving the white flag in terms of I give up on the team. It's a pragmatic move. That's all it is. It's just looking at, okay, maybe we just need to regroup for another day, like fight another day. Regroup, get some better assets, and let's do this. And if they go into this season, because here's the problem. If they don't make the play, if they keep everyone, they don't make the playoffs, then it was a complete waste. If they do make the playoffs, but they lose in the first round, I think it's still a waste. Yeah, you made the playoffs, an expanded playoffs. What does that get you? A wild card banner? Like, that's stupid, right? It only means anything if you go deep in the playoffs, which this team is not clearly built to do right now. They're performing at such a pathetic level, especially with their bullpen. And their defense, their bullpen.
That's it. That's the part.
Has been horrific. Like, just they almost gave it up again on Saturday. 5-1 lead going into the ninth against the Chicago Cubs, and they score 3 and have the tying run on second, and they almost did it. You know, it was just like, you kidding me, guys? This is insane. Like, it keeps happening. So, I'm with you, Eric. If they get a good offer, fantastic. And Farhan is not the type to sell for a peasant's, you know, ransom. That's not going to happen. He's not going to trade Rodon for like a struggling middle reliever or one prospect that's down on the chart. That, of course not. He would be fleeced. So he's only going to pull the trigger. But like you said, his only historical benchmark really to look at in terms of selling was Madison Bumgarner. But that has a totally different feel to it because it's Madison freaking Bumgarner. And there was so much pressure from the fan base, not saying Farhan listens to fans. He clearly doesn't. But there was a lot of pressure, potentially even from other ownership, going, we can't trade an icon. Don't trade the icon. We can't do that.
Right.
Carlos Rodon is not an icon of San Francisco Giants lore. So much easier pill to swallow.
Neither is Jock. Neither is John Brebbia is somebody they might want to look at trading. I know the bullpen stinks and you got to leave Kapler with something, but like, who cares at this point? If you can get something for Brebbia, do it, because they're going to run him into the ground. He pitched 3 of 4 this weekend against the Cubs. So did Camilo, which was a bit surprising to me.
Yeah, that was.
They've got the Dodgers coming up, but I think Gabe just wanted, I think they were in the, well, if we win and we prove that maybe we're in it, you know, we can do the things we need to do. But it's obvious that literally Brebbia and Duvall are the only two that he trusts in that bullpen. So he's going to run them as much as possible. So there's, like you said, there's no like tinker there. There's no Tony Watson to slot into the bullpen or something like that and be like, oh, this is enough of a move. So why not sell? Jock really, the last month hasn't done anything. So it's not like they're losing out on a huge production at this point.
Yeah.
Because they're not. And Rodon is the most attractive because he's going to opt out. He absolutely is. That's why he signed this deal. That's why the Giants signed this deal. Rodon has been injury prone his entire career. So when does he stay healthy? The first year he's got an incentive to stay healthy. I'm not saying. It's just very interesting.
It is. It is very interesting, but let's be honest. He's opting out anyway. And hypothetically, if he were to opt out the Giants, he could opt out to try and renegotiate a contract even with the Giants, right? The same goes to if they traded him and he goes to another contender, the season ends, he's a free agent no matter what. So it doesn't affect the Giants' ability to re-sign him if they wanted to pursue that. Not saying they would. I'm just saying it doesn't hamper their ability to re-sign him next year, whether they trade him or they don't. So you know, we've seen it before. The Yankees did it with Aroldis Chapman, right? You trade him away to the you know, the Cubs or whatever, and then he becomes free agent. Boom, right back with the Yankees. So we've seen other teams do this before. But, of course, Rodon doesn't have the history, and I think he would walk anyway. So freaking get something for him. Get something for him.
These are the guys that put teams over the top. And so let them kill you with an offer. You know, New York Yankees, they need another starter. They know they're going to the postseason. There's no way we're going to trade them to the Dodgers at this point. So look at those teams. See what kind of hauls you can get. The Yankees have a good farm system right now, too. Yeah. You know, I as a Giants fan, though, it's frustrating to be a little jealous of the Dodgers because you know they'll make a move. And they just keep replenishing their system. And it's not even just money. They spot the talent. They're very good at identifying talent. I'm still waiting for Farhan to bring that to the table here. So you know, Rodon, just get packages back. Plan for the future. 2022, it's not going to happen. It's like you said, I don't want to get into the wild card round to lose 2 games on the road to some team and just be like, yay. So,
yeah,
you know, like, woo, if they want to sell, I'm good with it. I have already kicked the season. I don't believe they can do anything. So I'm ready to focus on next year. It's crazy that we're 104 games into 102 games into this. Yeah. And we're saying this already. But, you know, yeah. Everybody uses the Braves as an example or the Nationals as an example a couple years ago. But those are the ones that did it. Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. They're the outliers. We don't hear about the teams that made a trade and then they didn't. We don't hear about those Padres teams that have fizzled out over the years or things like that. We only hear about the ones that came through. And it's just it's the rule of law when it comes to stuff like that. So, no, the Giants are not going to pull the Braves this year. So trade anybody you can. I'm on board.
So, I mean, I'm saying there's a chance the Giants could still tie last year's win total. All they have to do is go 56-4.
Yeah. They're four losses away from last year already. This is crazy.
I was thinking about that last night when they won, and I was like, wait, how far back are they from last year? And I was about to look at the standings for last year at this time, and then I just said, well, wait a minute. Can they even get next year's or last year's win total? And then I did that quick math of 60 games left. And I was like, oh, they would literally have to go 56-4. That's incredible, dude. Like just the disparity between the 2 years is right now. I mean, I am not on the bandwagon of all these dumbass Giants fans calling for Kapler's head already. You know, the defending National League Manager of the Year already like, yeah, get rid of him. And I was like, all right, wow, that's a short leash. They're still 500, but okay.
He can't field the ball for them. Like, all right, I'm not the biggest Kapler fan, but he can't fucking field the ball for them. He's not going out there as a reliever. I mean, what the fuck is he supposed to do at this point?
Yeah, some of the fielding has been just downright atrocious. Oh, but, you know, the internet experts on social media have said, well, they just need to go out and take more infield. You know, back in my day when I played high school baseball, we took ground balls till we were black and blue in the chest. And that's what really – I'm like, these guys have taken more ground balls in 1 month than you've taken your entire life.
Yep.
Don't tell me they need to just take more ground balls and that's going to solve their defensive woes. Give me a break. This is like the most ridiculous responses I hear from all these, I'm going to say it, boomers. I mean, I'm not that age at least, but, you know, it's like, stop it. Stop it, guys. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm not saying I do, but I know that they know more than me. So I'm going to defer to them, you know?
Well, that comes from us being... Yeah, we're Gen Xers.
Yeah,
we blended everything together. We grew up as everything developed together, so that's why we can handle the balance a lot better than those boomers.
Yeah,
the balance. Sorry, boomers. There.
Sorry, boomer. One positive, another positive note on Saturday. Of course, the Giants hit back-to-back home runs. Each one, I couldn't believe it. Like, I look down, crack, I look up, there it goes. I was like, wow. And I'm writing that down, crack, I look up, and there's, because it was consecutive pitches. Actually missed both pitches sitting in the breast box. But Joey Bart's homer was the hardest hit ball by a Giant in the StatCast era, 114 plus miles per hour. And even Kapler referred to it in his post game comments, talking about the exit velocity was just stunning. So, again, I mean, he's definitely been better since he's come back up. And I know that Will Clark has worked with him. Other people have worked with him down in the minors. And so, you know, he's not playing at all-star, you know, caliber right now. But he's overall, he's playing better. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, he seems to – I mean, he's still missing fastballs here and there, but he's hitting the faster pitches a little better. He's catching up. He had a time where he had faced like 195-mile-an-hour pitches, and he'd only gotten one hit so far. That inning alone, though, seeing Gonzo – Gonzo took a letter-high fastball. Well, I don't think it was a fastball. It might have been a changeup. But he took a letter-high pitch.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that which just showed me it was so good. And Bart – I mean, Bart started that comeback against Hader a couple weeks ago. So he's had some – some of these moments. He had a floating base hit a little while ago that I know scored some runs in a moment that they needed it. So it's good to see that he seems to be better in the higher pressure situations right now. He doesn't feel like an automatic out anymore. And, you know, it gives the Giants the leash to work with him a little bit. You know, Casale should be back soon, but I think Bart will stay the starting catcher.
Yeah, that's what's going to be interesting because they got Austin Wins as well. And Wins has been a serviceable replacement. He's been fine. Pitchers have liked working with him. So, but yeah, they're going to have to make that move once Casale comes back on deck, and we'll see what happens there. You know, for Bart's psychological well-being, if he's playing well, you'd think that maybe he wouldn't be sent down. But what does that mean for Wins? Is he, because, you know, again, Wins, I think, was one of those just, you know, replacements on the waiver wire that was just picked up on. So I think it would be like, hey, thanks for the Band-Aid service, but, you know, DFA. Sorry, buddy. Nothing against you. You did a good job, but, you know, we don't have room. It's quite remarkable the way this team is run. It's so different from when we grew up, Eric. It was just like, you know, who's playing?
Well, like, who's Dixon Machado? Exactly. Yeah, Dixon
Machado. Who is this guy? I've never heard of him in my life. And he goes up and he ropes a base hit last night, you know, plays fine defense. I was like, okay. But, you know, it's like they got to do what they got to do. They had no one else to play shortstop. No one. They were down to zero. So, but I've been told
that was the last text. Media
that it's the curse of Dubon. So, and I'm like, what?
Uh-huh, sure, yeah. About?
Yeah, because he was an all-star caliber shortstop, for sure.
What I couldn't figure out about this Dixon Machado move, though, was he on their active roster? Where did he even fly in from? Did he walk across the hall? Like, how did that guy get here so fast?
Yeah. I thought he was in double or triple A at the time, but yeah, he was like in Iowa or something. But I don't think he was physically with the Cubs, but I could be wrong. I actually don't know those details. I don't think he was on, he definitely wasn't on the 26 man roster, I'm pretty sure.
It was just weird that it was the Cubs and that's what happened. And like one of the Cubs pitchers he faced, they were teammates in Korea last year. And that's just so random that they were also in the Cubs organization and then faced each other in a major league game when they played in Korea together last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike put Machado on his fantasy team. Hey, man, I'm more desperate than that. I'm so desperate. I've just given up. I've like completely.
Oh, yeah. It's Monday. I should probably check to see where I'm at.
Out of 16 teams, I am in 15th place. I'm
7-7. You know, that's the nice thing about us is we've never pretended that we know anything about fantasy or those kind of things. And no, for us, I don't have the time.
I have friends that always rag me. They're like, you do a Giants podcast. You cover games. You know so much about the Giants, but you suck at fantasy baseball. I'm like, because I spend hours on Giants baseball and zero time on fantasy baseball, like zero. So I just like draft the day we draft. I'm like, oh, what does this site say? Yeah, I'll just take him. You know, like I'm not. Some guys are so into all the minutiae of weekly trades and weekly moves to maximize. They're like Farhan. They're like Farhan with fantasy leagues. I am not. I don't have the time for that, nor the attention span. But I do it just for fun. And give my money to my friends, basically. That's all. I donate. That's what I do.
Every year, yeah.
Yeah, my wife is always like, you lose every year. That's, you were just losing money. And I'm like, yeah, but I hang out with my friends, whatever.
I was going to say, you're paying for the night to hang out with your friends. That's what it all comes down to.
That's pretty funny. All right, so we don't really have to talk too much about injury updates other than Brandon Crawford is going to be on a rehab assignment. So, you know, he'll be coming up hopefully in about a week or so in the short.
Yeah. Cause Tyro's down for the week after getting smacked in the head.
Yeah. He was hit in the head and he was dizzy according to Kapler in the post game, not feeling well. He went through concussion protocol, of course, and he's on the IL for 7 days minimum right now. And, you know, it was a pretty vicious hit. He never lost consciousness, but, he definitely wasn't all there. He got his bell rung. So, they're going to rely on Machado.
Poor guy. I feel so bad for Tyro. Between the friendly fire he got from Rodon and then getting hit in the head, I mean, what a bad week for him.
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, Rodon giving up a home run there. He came into the dugout and kicked a bat and it nailed him in the shin. He went down like a sack of potatoes. Obviously, Rodon was very apologetic about it and showed remorse. But, hey, look, that happens, right? Like, they're pros. They get frustrated. We get frustrated playing, you know, rec ball. So, I mean, like, it happens. Yeah. I get it.
Still slam. I mean, I slam my equipment when I was younger. I mean, I know these guys aren't young, but it's the same competitiveness. And so I kind of get it. Just make sure you don't take out your shortstop when you do that.
Yeah. No, I don't mind him showing that passion. I'd rather him care than just sit down and pretend like nothing happened or laugh.
Well, it was weird because after the game, Gabe's all, well, we were talking to Carlos and, you know, he knows that that's unacceptable behavior. And he like went on for a full minute about it. And I was kind of like, dude, okay, you could have just left it at, you know, Rodon knew it was a bad thing. He apologized to Tyro. We'll handle it. But it's done. He kept talking about, but he kept talking about, you know, I know his competitiveness gets the best of him, but like, don't air all that dirty laundry, Gabe. I don't want to know all that. Like, just handle it, man. You know, it made me wonder about the clubhouse dynamics a little bit going on. But I mean, poor Tyro, he does. He's got a magnet right now, so guy's down for a little bit.
He's kind of like Brandon Belt, you know? Like, I'm surprised Belt has been hit by all these things.
And Tyro, that was the interesting thing. When Will Clark was in the booth with Kruk and Kipe, they asked him, whose swing do you really like on the Giants? Who do you like to watch hit? His answer was Tyro. Both guys in the booth and I at the same time, because Gonza was up, thought he was going to say Gonzalez, but he said Tyro. He's like, I just love the way this guy swings. I worked with him a little bit, and he's got a great approach, and he can take to all fields. And it was kind of a shocker that Will Clark's – the guy he likes to watch on the Giants right now is Tyro Estrada. I mean, like, who knew? He was just some utility guy. I like Tyro. I think he's been a great addition.
Oh, he has. He's been – yeah, there's been nothing wrong with him. He's been very serviceable, more than serviceable, with a little bit of pop. So it's all good. So – the Giants coming up anyway, so no transactions to talk about this week other than that Machado trade for a right-handed reliever. It was like a 5-something ERA in the minors, so it's kind of like tit for tat. They needed a Band-Aid. No other major injuries really to kind of go over right now, just some minor ones. But coming up, big series, Eric, 4 versus LA. We used to say it was big for the division. The division's gone. Doesn't matter now. So now it's just about staying relevant in the wild card race. And it's going to be a tough assignment, you know? I mean, even if they split, they could lose ground in the wild card race, and they certainly aren't going to gain. So it's going to be hard to win 3 out of 4 from LA. But they got that coming up, and then 3 at the Oakland Coliseum over the weekend. But, you know, if you look at the schedule coming up, it's after that, they're at San Diego, another tough opponent. Then they get a little bit of a reprieve at home. Pittsburgh and Arizona, at Colorado, at Detroit, at Minnesota, and then they close out August with 3 at home against the Padres. So, look, July was another bad month for the Giants, and they've turned the page to another month, and I know it's just a number. There's no magic of the calendar turning, but if they want to stay relevant, they got to play not just above 500. They got to be significantly above 500 during this month because they got 2 teams to catch for that wild card spot if they hope to do that.
Yeah, they don't leave California for the next 18 days, so that's good. San Diego is literally their only road trip because the other one's Oakland, and they're going to sleep in their own beds for that anyways. Yeah. So this is the time to make a run. I mean, I know the Dodgers and the Padres are on this slate, but you've got Oakland, Pittsburgh, and Arizona in the middle of this. And then you go to Colorado, where they've hit really well lately. Then you go to Detroit, who's not a very good team. So they have a stretch here where if they want to put together a run, they can, but – you know, I'm okay if they trade some pieces and still put together a run. They won't have to face Montas, though, this against Oakland. Montas just got traded to the Yankees. So there's constantly stuff going on. But that takes Rodon off the board, possibly, to go to the Yankees.
For so we got to wonder.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Wow.
So maybe the Cardinals would be a team that would look to get Rodon, which would be a really interesting thing to trade Rodon to the team directly in front of you at this point, or the team you're trying to catch. But I could see that happening.
Wow. The Yankees get their men. Athletics ace Frankie Montas and closer Trevino, too.
Oh, wow. Trevino. Wow. They don't even use Aroldis for the ninth anymore. That's the crazy thing. He just comes in whenever Boone wants to use him. So I could see – Wow. I can see a new closer in New York. Yeah, New York's going for it. And you mentioned the Dodgers. They're only a game behind the Yankees for best record in baseball, if you can believe it. As good as the Yankees have been, the Dodgers have been that good over the last month or so.
Well, the Yankees have been real streaky. They'll win, like, you know, 18 out of 19 and then lose a few in a row and then, you know, whatever. The Dodgers are just – you look at their last 30 games, it's ridiculous. They're like 25-5. I mean, they just keep winning. Like, they're just – they're just destroying everyone. It's not even close anymore. They're the team that's built to be like this, and I hate to say it, but you know, probably the best team, if not the second best team in all the majors right now. So, no, you just got to hope and pray that you know, they'll probably get that first round bye, which, you know, is a huge thing now in Major League Baseball. And you go right to that second round, that somehow someone's going to bounce them, like last year's Braves, right? You know, you just got to hope for something like that. But
yep.
No, I mean, who knows if they're the number one seed and the Giants sneak in as number 6 and win that first round, guess who they play?
Yeah, but I mean, they still don't match up well. That's the crazy part. So far this season, the home team has won every Giants Dodgers game. So it'd be nice if that trend continued. That's true. It'd be nice if that trend continued, but it's going to be tough. Yeah, it really is.
That's going to be real
tough. I mean, tonight's matchup, this is the last game the Giants have before the deadline. So they got Logan Webb going tonight. So you think that they hope to get one win under their belt before they make any moves. And it's their last gasp effort. I really feel like these next 3 weeks are the make or break. They're already broke, so whether or not they can get back into it. You need a good week, 2 weeks to get back into it, but you also need the other teams to not do well. Problem is the Giants are 3-7 over the last 10, and every team above them is either 6-4 or 7-3. Yeah. So you're not making up any ground anywhere, and that's why I'm ready to see sell mode. Trey Mancini went from the Orioles to the Astros. Stuff's starting to come in all of a sudden. So tomorrow will be very interesting. And quick plug, those of you that are listening to this ahead of time, ahead of the trade deadline tomorrow, we will be doing another trade deadline special over on Giants Chatter. Yep. Just like last time, we had a bunch of guests. This year, our guests – I don't want to insult our last year's guests by saying we've stepped it up, because I love Jeff Young, who's out there, who joined us this year. But this year, we're going to get Bill Lasky. We've got Joe Shasky, and we've got Sean Estes.
Very nice.
Tune in tomorrow on Giants Chatter at 12:30 Pacific time on Tuesday the 2nd, and we're going to run right up to the deadline in about a half hour after that. So anything that breaks during that time, we'll be talking about.
That is fantastic, guys. Good job getting those guys. Yeah, Pulaski is a real generous with his time, and so is Sean Estes. So good job.
Honestly, all credit to Steven Rizzotto. He is the man behind the magic right there. And I know you hung out with Steven a little bit this weekend.
We chatted a lot before the game. Yeah,
he's a big fan of yours. I mean that wholeheartedly. He's a real big fan of yours. He talks you up all the time when we talk. So it's really a lot of fun.
Yeah, Steve and I chatted for, I don't know, a good half hour, just standing in the dugout, watching BP, just talking about life and the podcast and baseball and everything else. So I missed where he was sitting, and he had DM'd me and was like, hey, I'm over on the right side. And I had already set up shop on the left side, and then I didn't even see it till the next day. Screw off, Eric.
That's man, we have some layers of inside jokes on Giants Chatter. Sorry. All credit to Steven Rizzotto. Okay.
Moving on. That's great.
Yeah, Steven's a good kid. We should get him on one of these times. Steven's a good kid. He's working his butt off.
He is. He's doing a great job. He's doing a wonderful job. And I wish I had that kind of early start doing stuff like this. But, you know, like I said, like we all know, this isn't a job. This is a passion in our 40s.
So I tell him that all the time. I'm like, kid, if I had access to the stuff you had access to, my whole career might have been different when it came to this stuff.
Exactly. Ernie, yeah, thanks for listening. We did just mention that Montas went to the Yankees, and even along with Trevino, and then Trey Mancini just went from the Orioles to the Astros. So it's going to be going crazy. It's going to be popping off here. But like Eric said, they got a nice trade special tomorrow over on Giants Chatter. So definitely listen to that. And then we'll have some wrap-up coverage online. We'll be back next Monday, most likely, for the next episode of TorchCast, which will be episode 260. Don't forget that I interviewed Logan Webb prior to Saturday's game. So that is already up on the feed wherever you get your podcast, but I will attach it to the end of this podcast for the audio recording. Won't be available on the video feed. But you can find everything that I just mentioned at torturecast.com, wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, like us on Facebook here, where we try to stream our weekly podcast at facebook.com/torturecast. And you can follow us collectively on Twitter at torturecast, individually at ChadK21 for myself. At two out hits with the number two for Eric, not TWO, because that would be twoots. No. It'd be like twoots or something.
Yeah, honestly, the whole reason I chose the number is I didn't want to have to write the double O because I knew I'd keep screwing it up. That's the only reason I chose the number.
And then OG, founder of the podcast, Willie Dills Gregory, could not join us today. You can follow him over at Willie Dills. Oh, Eric, you already mentioned Giants Chatter. Anything else going on?
Nope. Come watch us tomorrow on deadline day, and you know, we'll see if Rodon's still with the Giants in 24 hours.
Yeah, we'll see this. So will they sell or will they hold? All right. We'll see you next week for episode 260. For Eric, this is Chad signing off. Until then, have a great weekend and happy trade deadline day. Boom. Hey, I'm Chad from TorchCast, by the way, just a small independent blog or whatever. And obviously we're here for you know, Will Clark's number 22 retirement ceremony. And I know a lot of Giants fans definitely loved Will Clark. He was, you know, a lot of fans' favorite players. Who did you watch growing up? Who's your favorite player?
That's tough. I was an A's fan, so I got to watch all those guys. Zito, Mulder. I love watching pitchers. And then, honestly, my favorite, I had a couple favorite players, but I liked playing shortstop when I was younger, so Bobby Crosby was like, he was one of my go-tos, and then obviously Eric Chavez was there for a long time, so those were a lot of guys. And then when I was real young, I'm sure you can ask anybody that was around during that era. I mean, it was Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds was my go-to. Especially growing up in this area, all of those guys were some of my favorite players.
Yeah, Xavi, man, he goes way back. And Crosby, how tall he was and how good he was at the shortstop position. Mm-hmm. Like you said, used to play that or whatever. As far as Barry is concerned, I mean, how many conversations have you had with him? And what'd you guys talk about?
We've had a couple. It's nothing. We don't go too deep into anything.
No hitting tips now, apparently.
No hitting tips for me. No, it's... very good talks. I mean, he's just, most of the time he tells me he wants to hit my sinker. Just one time. He's like, I want to see it one time. And I, in my head, I'm like, I really don't want to throw it to him one time because he probably hit it in the water or something. But no, that's cool when someone like that says something. It's special. And that's the same that I had with Will, too, because he known Will since 2014, probably since I was drafted. I've been able to be around him, and he's helped me a lot. Just being able to talk to him, pick his brain, listen to his stories. I think that's kind of the name of the game, is picking up stuff from your elders and taking what you can learn from them.
Yeah, he's a student of the game. Yeah. All the stories of him, like, you know, obviously with the infamous fastball inside off of Greg Maddux during the 89 NLCS. But, I mean, just kind of just overall, he could really call or feel the game in terms of, like, what was going to be pitched. And he was a student of the game. And it goes way beyond analytics. So have you guys talked about that? I mean, because you're obviously coming from the other side of the mound here. But, I mean, is that something you kind of, not just necessarily what Will Clark's told you, but, like, you know, do you ever go on the mound, and I know you're looking at your catcher, putting down the signs, but are they going to think what the batter's thinking and then throw something off? I mean, what's the thought process when you guys are on the mound?
I would say it's probably a little different than it used to be. But, yeah, I mean, when I'm out there, I'm trying to compete. I'm trying to beat the guy in the box. And I don't think that part of the game has changed. I think now there's just a little bit more numbers that go into it. Like, I know this guy's not good at a certain pitch, so I attack that pitch. But at the end of the day, it's all about competing. And I think those guys that feel the game thing is something that the best players have. And that's something that I've started to notice just being around, you know, certain guys in here. There are guys in here that were the same way, yeah, that I've gotten to play with, and just being able to see that and see it every day, and then, like, watching Will, like, the videos of him playing, like, he had that same exact thing, and that's something I think all the best players that have played have that little bit of, like, you know, their talent is obviously there, but there's something in their brain that's, it's just, like, it's just different. There's the feel of the game. There's the they're never afraid of a big moment type of thing. And he was like that. And I think that's what made him so special. I think that's what makes, those guys so special, those certain guys.
Yeah, I think, you know, today's game with analytics and looking at the numbers, and there's definitely a time and a place for it. Don't get me wrong. The stats show it, but, you know, at the same time, guys like Will and others today are able to, like, seize the moment no matter what the matchup is and just be able to pull that out. Just knowing what a guy's going to throw, seizing the moment, being the guy who wants to be up at the plate. I mean, who have you played with, and especially on this team now, who you think kind of possesses some of those abilities for those kind of situations?
I thought that the main guy for me was Buster, was being able to watch him do his thing last year. Like, that's pretty special to see. He's definitely one of those guys. But yeah, other than that, like, I get to be around Carl Belt, and especially this guy right here. You know, I grew up watching him. He was, I tried to hit like him, and I tried to do a lot of things like him, just because he made the game really easy. And if, like, you look back at his career, it's like he's had a lot of big moments where he does some pretty special things, and I think it's cool because now I get to be a part of it and be able to say I play with him. But all these guys, like I said, I got to play with Buster and then with Crawford and Belt. Like, those guys won World Series. They did big things in those World Series, and I think that part of the game is never lost.
Yeah, and obviously you're talking about Evan Longoria, and you know, he has his injury right now, and hopefully he recovers from that, because, you know, he doesn't have many, many years left to play, and hopefully he sticks with the team and playing ball a little bit longer. And you mentioned Buster Posey, and, you know, in his retirement speech, he really did mention you as the guy who was the man. Like, he pointed to you as someone who could be a leader, who has that tenacity and whatever. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, obviously. I know you're not, like, you're kind of a humble guy, but, you know, what did that mean to you? I mean, you've had many conversations with him, but, you know, he called you up publicly and just kind of said, hey, man, this is the guy that you want on your team.
That was special. I mean, when you hear it from a guy like that, it's pretty cool to hear, and I think that has a big meaning to me, especially because it's I've gone. It's not really the baseball thing. It's more of like the just being around him, like the human part of the stuff. And I think that there's something that me and him kind of clicked with us a little bit. So I. That like desire, that like need to compete, and kind of that, I would say that win at all costs kind of feeling. And I think that's something I try to carry with myself all the time, because that's all I really want to do is win, and that's why. I'm so lucky that I get to be around these guys. And to hear something like that from Buster, who was that way, who won 3 World Series, come back from a very gruesome injury, and to do what he did, it was just like, it's pretty cool. It was huge. That was a special thing that he said about me, and you know, hopefully I can prove him right.
And last thing to wrap up here. Look, you guys are, you know, hit a rough patch coming out of the break, obviously. And congratulations, by the way, on your All-Star, or well, you should have been an All-Star selection, I think. But you know, that's another discussion amongst Giants fans and the professionals. But one question I had for you was, you know, look, you guys are only 4 back,
yeah.
And the wild card is there, right? The expanded playoffs. I mean, there's no reason to think you guys can't come right back in here. Just a couple good weeks, and you're right back in the thick of things. I mean, what do you think needs to kind of improve right now to get you guys back in the hunt?
I think we just gotta get back to the basics of just having fun and going out there and, you know, doing our job. And that's everybody in here, like 1 through 26, doing their jobs. Like, when everyone does their job, I think it gets, that's what makes you win. It's not one person doing it all. We're not trying to do that at all. I feel like because we have been losing, there are times where I bet you can ask a lot of people in here that's like, you feel that you need to hit the one home run to win the game. You feel like you need to go 8 that day because you feel like we need to win. You got bullpen guys that, you know, there's been a lot of games lately where, you know, we're down or tied late, and it's a lot of pressure on those guys to either keep the game as it is, like down 1 or 2, and I think maybe we're trying to do too much. And I think once we get back to just having fun in the basics, like the beginning of the year, I think that's what we were doing. We were playing well, and we get back to that, we'll be all right.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Logan.
Yeah,
I appreciate your time.
Yeah.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.